Okay. We're holding on Ches Mod Beis, about the middle of the Amud, the first line of the medium side line. We started yesterday with a story to illustrate the idea that if you have, just like we said, you have Panim Chadoshes by a Sheva Brachos, then you say all the Brachos. Similarly, we said if you have Panim Chadoshes by a Beis HaAvol, then you say the Brachos, then you say the Brachos for the Avol, which we're going to discuss now, even after the first day. And thus we have the example where either Rish Lakish or Rokhiya Bar Abba were sitting Shiva, and they came to be Menachem Avol, and Rish Lakish, and they tell Rish Lakish's Meturgam on Yehuda Bar Nachmeni to first he told him to say a vart about the occasion, why the child died. And we said he was mentioning certain averis that apparently were prevalent in that time, and he was saying that you, the father of Chiyah Ba'aba, or Rish Lakish, as the case may be, are considered important enough in Hashem's eyes that you're suffering on behalf of the whole Jewish people. Now, so Amar Lei, so he tells him, so Ches Amud Beis, the first line of the wide line, the first line of the medium-sized lines, rather. Yeah. Amar Lei, Kum Eima Milsa Neged Shvacha Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Stand up and say something in honor of the praise of Hashem. That's the first of the brachas. Pasach va'omer, he started out with Baruch. Rashi says Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam. The Gemara leaves that part out. Okay, la gadol b'roiv gadloi. The Eibishter is great with his tremendous greatness. Adir v'chazak b'roiv neiros. He was mighty and powerful with many awesome deeds. Mechayim meis ma'amore. He revives the dead with his word. Oitzik dolos adin chaykev and eflois adin mispar. Baruch Atah Hashem mechayim meis. What's the point of that being one of the brachas? So Marsha explains because when any time somebody dies, especially like this in this case it was a child or bachur as we said yesterday, people always start questioning Hashem's justice. So and Marshal adds, especially in this case, was saying that it wasn't even that he deserved to lose a child; it was rather because of what the people of that generation were doing. So therefore, you start off with a bracha, acknowledging that no, we accept that Hashem knows what He's doing. Amalei kum eima milsa keneged avelim. Now get up and say something about the avelim, the bracha about the avelim themselves. Pasach v'amar, achenu ham yugoyim, our brothers who are worn out, ham yugoyim ba'evel azeh, who are sad from this avelus, tnu levavchem lachkar es zois, put your minds towards considering this, zois yemed es lad, this is something that exists forever, death, in other words, is something that's existed since the beginning, nosivu b'sheshu t'mei b'reshis, it's a path, it's a well-worn path since the 6 days of creation, rabim shosu, many have already drunk from it, rabim yishtu, many in the future will, just as the earlier ones drank from it, so will the later ones. When we say drink from it, either we mean in various places in Tanakh, puranus, punishment, is compared to a cup. Because b'yad Hashem, for example, in Tillim, and in various places in Nevi'im. So either it means the cup of punishment, or it means the cup of nicham avelim, as we're going to talk about soon, that the Avol is given cups of wine to drink. So either way, he's saying it's a long-standing thing. Achenu bal mechames. Achenu, our brothers, Baal Mechamis Yenacham Eschem, the master of consolations, Hashem, should comfort you. Baruch Menachem Avelim.
Adiyad means when
Mashiach comes. So one thing, one second. Omer Abaya. Abaya said, I disagree with that Nusach. Rabim Shosu Lema. Yes, you can say that many people have drunk from it up until now. Rabim Yishtu Loy Lema. You should not say that people will drink from it in the future. Mishir Shonim Lema. You can say that the earlier ones have drunk from it. Mishir Achrenim Loy Lema. But you should not say the later ones. The Amr of Shimon, and we'll get back to your point about Mashiach's times in a second after we finish these two lines. The Amr of Shimon, Lachish, V'chein Tanim Shmeidir Am Yasi, La'olam Ayustachadam, Pivla Sutton. The person should never open his mouth to the Sutton. Don't say something negative because that negative statement has an effect. In this case, if you're saying that there's going to be death in the future, then that itself creates the reality that there's going to be. Amr of Yosef Maikra, what's the pasuk that expresses that idea? The pasuk says in Yeshaya that the people say, if Hashem had not left us some kind of remnant, Lulei Hashem Hoysalonu Sored Kimat, Kisdoima Yinu La'amoda Domino, we would have been like Kisdoima La'amoda, completely destroyed. And Maya Hadrulay, so what does the Eibishter answer the Navi? Oh, you guys are comparing yourselves to Sodom and Gomorrah. Speaking of Sodom and Gomorrah, Shimud Bar Hashem Ktinei Sodom v'Gomorrah. Listen to what Hashem says, you leaders of Sodom, you're acting like the people of Sodom. The very fact that they use the analogy, thinking of themselves as they would have been like Sodom and Gomorrah, that itself opens up the Kitzrug to compare them to that.
That's to confirm that.
That's what we're saying. That's the pasuk that proves it. So what are we? So the Iyun Yaakov on Ein Yaakov points out that the underlying machloikus over here is the question: is there going to be death in Mashiach times? If we find there's a machloikus from Shonim about that, the Rambam holds the famous thing: the Rambam holds that in Mashiach times, Olam Kiminhagi Noyig, the world will still continue to go in its natural course like it does now, except that we won't be subjugated to the Goyim. Shmuel holds, right? So then the Rambam quotes that. The Rambam quotes that at the end in Hilchos Teshuva and Hilchos Malachim that Ein Bein Olam Hazeh Leimotzei Mashiach Alashiv Malchus is Bilvad. In one of his letters, actually in Negeta Seman, the Rambam goes even further. He writes about Mashiach that he'll die and he'll be succeeded by his son, and his son will die and he'll be succeeded by his grandson. So the Rambam obviously holds that in Mashiach's time there will be death as just as there is now. So therefore, according to that, it's not all Yiftachad and Pelah Sutton. Yes, eventually everyone who's alive now is going to die. There's no opening the mouth to Sutton for that. Whereas Abaya, who's objecting to that, holds like the Shitta of the Ramban and many others are showing him that no, after Tchias Amesim there'll never be death, at least not for the Tzaddikim. Sidus also talks about that idea, and therefore Al Tiftach Pelos often don't imply that there is going to be death in the future, because let Mashiach come and there won't be. The Chassam Sofer has an interesting and long explanation about the text of this bracha. He points out, you start off that you say that the people who are depressed because of Evil Hazeh, which is Lashon Zachar, and then he continues Tnu Levavchem Lachris Zoy. Consider Zoyt feminine. So he explains that in some arichos that they refer respectively to the guf and the neshama. Everybody is depressed because of the avelos over the body. But remember Zoyt here met us lad. The Zoyt, the neshama, which is feminine, exists forever.
And that's what the neshama goes on Zoyt.
Yeah, that's what I said. Zoyt refers to the neshama, yeah. Amalei, next he, Rish Lakish or Rechi Ba'aba, tells Yehuda Banachmeni, Kum Eima Milsa Kineged Menachme Avelin. Now get up and say the bracha about the people who, in honor of the people who do Nicham Avelin. So, you know, this sequence of brachas over here is sort of like, you know, at the end of a bris, when the six harachmons that we add to benching, so you have one in honor of the baby, one in honor of the moyo, one in honor of the sandik, etc. Here it's a similar kind of idea. So we had one in praise of Hashem, one speaking to the Avelim, and now we have one speaking to the Menachemim. Pasach Bama, he starts off saying, Achenu Goim lechasadim, bnei goim lechasadim, our brothers who are goim lechesed, they do chesed for others, bnei goim lechasadim, the children of people who do chesed, hamachzikim b'vrisei shel Avraham Avinu, who hold on to the covenant of Avraham Avinu, because he was goim lechesed. And Rashi quotes over here the famous thing about Vayita Eshel b'Be'er Sheva, that the Eshel stands for Achilosh Sia Levia. Levia is over here, like evidently Rashi is understanding it over here, that he would also, part of his chesed was to do levayas for people who passed away. Usually we understand levia as escorting guests, but apparently Rashi is taking it over here also in the sense of escorting the mace.
And Linda also, not
Rashi in Soita, where it mentions about the Eishol, says Achilash Sia Lina. Yeah, there's different days about it. Anyway, so therefore we call during Chesed the Bris of Avraham Avinu. And Marsha adds the famous thing Rashi mentions it in Chumash about Chesed ve'emes, that this is the ultimate kind of Chesed, because you're not going to get a reward for it. You're not going to get a reward. You know, the other person's not going to be able to reciprocate you. Rather, anyway, Shenema, the pasuk says Yizati v'mana sheitzaves bonav v'goymer, as it says about Avraham, that I know him and I appreciate him because he'll command his children to do the shomer derech Hashem lasa tzedaka u'mishpat. So he finishes off Achenu, our brothers, balag mul yishalom lachem gmulchem, the one who gives reward, the Ebishter should pay you back your reward. Baruch atah Hashem mishalom agmul, blessed is Hashem who pays back reward. Fourth bracha, Amalei, kum eima milsa keneged kol Yisrael. Now get up and say a bracha about the whole Jewish people. Pasach lama, ribon ha'olamim, fidei v'hatzil, save and rescue, malei, toisha, these are all different synonyms for saving, amcha Yisrael, min ha'dever, u'min ha'cherev, u'min ha'biza, from plague and from sword and from and from captivity. Umina shidofen, umina yirokin. Shidofen and yirokin are two different kinds of blights that can affect the crops, which would cause a famine. So Maharshal explains that we're mentioning over here four different disasters that can lead to death or whatever. We're asking in order. The Gemara explains in Bava Basra, in fact, that out of all of these, Biza, which is being taken captive, is the worst of all. The person who's been the Gemara discusses over there. You have there's famine, there's plague, there's sword, and then there's captivity, which is the worst of all because any of the other three can be a result of it. So we ask Hashem to save us from. So we're asking in this bracha to save us from all these different four kinds of disasters, or from any peronius and misfortunes of our soil, or from any other disasters that come upon the world. Terem nikar v'atasana. Even before we call out, you should answer. Baruch ata oitzer amageifa. Blessed are you, Hashem, who stops the plague. Yeah, in each of these, there was a shame amount. In the first one, it actually started with Baruch Atah Hashem, because we said yesterday a sequence of barachas. You always, the first one begins with Baruch Atah Hashem. The other ones afterwards don't, but each one had to end with a formula. Baruch Atah Hashem, whatever. So now, what's the deal? I mean, we never hear of these four barachas said nowadays. So the different Rishonim talk about it. In particular, the Ramban explains that we're not saying these four brachas are required; they're kind of optional. He says maybe the one about the Avelim is more required than the other ones, but basically they're all optional, and therefore over time they've kind of fallen out of use. Besides that, by the way, the Gemara doesn't mention over here, but it mentions in brachas. And it's brought in Shulchan Aruch also. We mentioned yesterday that there used to be a minhag of doing the mezuzah in a beis ha'avil differently than usual. Instead of just nevarach shalchan mishaloi or nevarach alakenu shalchan mishaloi, they would add in nevarach alakenu hamenachem avelim shalchan mishaloi. So that is brought in Shulchan Aruch. But again, you don't really hear people doing that nowadays. There's another thing that's mentioned in Shulchan Aruch. That there's a different nusach of the fourth bracha of benching, and actually some Rishonim also bring a different nusach in the third bracha that incorporates a thing of nichum avelim. The Gemara mentions in brachas, the Gemara has a nusach of it. It's basically it's an extended version of the bracha atoy v'ametim, the fourth bracha of benching that. Hakel Avinu Malkeinu Adireinu, etc. The Gemara mentions that there's a longer version of it that you say in a Beis Avol. Atoy Vametiv Kelemes Dianemes Shofet Betzedek. A whole long nukta. So again, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. But there's a machlokas Rishonim whether you always say it or whether you only say it when there's a minion. We said before that Birkas Avelin, these four brachas that we listed here in the Gemara, are only said if there's a minion. What about what these four brachas that we said here doesn't say?
So when did we say that?
We said yesterday. That just like Birkas Chasanim, there has to be a minion, and the Chasan counts as one of them. Birkas Avelim, there has to be ten, but the Oval doesn't count as one of them. So that was the four brachas we just mentioned. Yeah, we don't know whether it was before the meal, during, whatever. But no, here we're talking about something else, that it's the Gemara brings this longer nusach of the fourth bracha of benching, but there's machlokas Rishonim, whether that applies all the time or whether that's also something you need a minyan for. Generally, generally speaking, the minhag follows the minhag is that pretty much saying that has dropped out of use for the same reason, because according to the opinion that you need 10 for it, you don't usually have 10 people eating together in an oval's house. But even when there are, you don't really hear people doing it. Indeed, but it's still Birkas Avelim, as according to that, the argument is that's included in Birkas Avelim, and therefore we're saying you need a minion for it.
Even eating in an avel's house is
also true, yeah. Omar Ula, Va'amri Lov Masnisitana, Ula says another din about the Beis HaOvel, others say it says in a Braisa, Asara Kosis Tikna Chachamim Beis HaOvel. The Chachamim made a takana that the Oval is given 10 cups of wine to drink when they eat together. Shlosha Kodimach, and the idea is, Rashi says, Rashi quotes a pasuk from Mishlei, that when a person is feeling embittered, you should give him wine to like drown his sorrows in it. So therefore you give him 10 cups of wine. Shlosha kodem achila. Three would be before the main meal. Rashi says before the meal they would eat. They would sit there eating cake and cookies and whatnot. So together with that, they were given three cups of wine. Kedei leftayach has b'nei me'av, where the wine then opens up his stomach and then whets his appetite. Shlosha b'seich achila kedei lishvitz achila b'shem me'av. Then three during the meal itself, during the main course. In order to soak up, in order to help digest the food in his stomach. V'abal acher achila, and four after the meal. Echad keneged azon, ve'echad keneged birkas ha'aretz, ve'echad keneged bani Yerushalayim, ve'echad keneged atoy v'ameitiv. One corresponding to each of the four brachas of benching, which Rashi says that means after each bracha he would drink a cup, and then they'd pour him another cup. So you end up with four cups during benching. The Hagos Agra on the side over here takes that out and says that maybe we said before there were four brachas we had for Hashem, for the Avelim, for the Menachemim, for the Jewish people. So maybe the idea is these four cups are one each for those brachas. And the Ritva points out that what, according to our Girsa over here, what's the connection between the four brachas of benching and the four cups for the Avel? He says each bracha of benching reflects something about life and now the life that's gone. So the bracha hazonas hakol, for example, man v'yov chayim, man v'yov mezonu. Who does the Eibishter give? When the Eibishter gives parnasa, it's for the living. So therefore, after saying the bracha hazon, like so to speak, the Avil feels his loss more keenly. That you know what? Now my relative is no longer having the advantage of hazon. He's no longer being sustained by Hashem. Therefore, you drink a cup of wine. Similarly with each of the other ones. Apparently, yeah. Later on, they added four more cups to drink. Echad keneged chazonia here, one in honor of the chazonim, which means the shamashim, the people, the chevra kadisha, who are involved with burying the mess and with other tzarchi tzibur. Echad keneged parnosia here, one in honor of the parnosim, who Rashi says they were rich and they would give away their money to help bury the poor people, so they deserved thanks. The echad keneged beis hamikdash, and one for the beis hamikdash. They would have a bracha that Hashem should comfort us for with the rebuilding of the beis hamikdash, and they would drink a cup of wine for that. The echad keneged Rav Gamliel, and one for Rav Gamliel. What's Rav Gamliel? We'll explain in a minute. However, his chilu ha yishoytzu to mishtakrin. It came the point they were getting very drunk by this time. You have 14 cups of wine. So they returned things to the way they were before. Now, what does it mean the way they were before? Rashi says it means they went back to the 10 cups. Other Rishonim say no, it means they were mivatel this whole concept of the 10 cups altogether. They realized even 10 cups is too much. And this is why nowadays you do have an Avil is allowed to drink wine. It's not like before the 9 days, but you don't have him drink 10 cups of wine during the meal because you don't want him to get drunk. My Rav Gamliel, what's the special thing in honor of Rav Gamliel? The Tanya. Originally, because the expenses of funerals were so high, the funeral was harder for the relatives more than the death, because Rashi says they would bury him in very expensive clothes or whatever. It came to a point where people were just abandoning the body and running away and leaving it up to the tzibur to bury him. Ad shabar Rav Gamliel, but Nog Kalus Batzmei, until Rav Gamliel came along and treated himself lightly. When we learned this in Moed Katan, we said there were two different pirushim. Tosfos brought over there. Either it meant that he left instructions that after he passes away, they should bury him in Sheep or Tachrichim, or the first time one of his relatives passed away, he had them buried in Sheep Tachrichim. They brought him or his relative, whatever, out in linen garments, which are cheap. And then after him, everybody began the practice of burying in linen Tachrichim.
He had to actually do it,
right, because by him doing this, that automatically accomplishes what a takana would accomplish. Automatically, everybody's field, if it's good enough for Rav Gamliel, then it's good enough for us. So according to the other explanation, he didn't. He just had to wait until the first time a relative of his passed away. And this is brought in Shulchan Aruch, and this is what we do nowadays. It's brought also, the Mefarshim at Shulchan Aruch bring that Api Kabbalah also is important, that the Tachrichim should be made out of linen, and actually Api Kabbalah is the idea they should only be made out of linen, nothing else, no mixture of any other material. What the idea is, I don't know, but yeah. Amar Papa, for her Idna, nowadays, no Galma Afil B'Tzurada Barzuza. Nowadays, people are knowing that they use Tachrichim, even a Tzurada, which is a canvas, Barzuza, which is worth only a Zuz, like really cheap material. Same idea. Now, we're finished for now with the matter of Hasanim and Avelim. So now the Gemara is going to go back to, let's say, the beginning of the Masechta. We said, why was the Sulban Isaf L'Yomer Rabbi? So Rashi had said right there, because if he has Tainus Basulim, if he has a complaint that his wife's not a Basula, then the next day they can go to Beis Din. So now we have to just start discussing, what is this Tainus Basulim? And what happens with that? Now, there's two kinds of Tainus Basulim. There's two things that happen at first bia with a basula. Number one, because there's basulim over there, there's the hymen which is being broken. Therefore, there's bleeding. That's kind of an objective thing. You can see. You put down a cloth over there, and if you find blood afterwards, then you know she was a basula. Number two, there's it's more of a subjective thing that it feels tight. It feels tight when you're trying to do the bia. And if it doesn't, then it's called what the Gemara is going to call Pesach Pasuach, an open door.
That's kind of more a
subjective thing, though. To one person, it's like more loose, more open than I expected. But to a different person, it wouldn't feel that way. So that's what we're going to discuss over here.
Do you need both?
Wait, we're going to get to that. There is also the question, by the way, do both of those things happen at all ages? Tosfos discusses over here from Rabbeinu Chananel, and they themselves discuss the question, what about by an adult woman, by a begeris? Do you have, are you necessarily going to have both, or are you going to have only one or only the other? And if so, which is the one? So Rabbeinu Chananel wants to say that a begeris, you're not going to have bleeding, but you will expect it to be tight. Whereas Tosfos himself says the other, brings from another Gemara, the other way around, that a begeret, there will be bleeding, but there won't necessarily be that tightness. That's how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. Anyway, but so obviously here, if we're talking about the both considerations, then we have to be talking about a Naira. We have to be talking about that she's just reached puberty. So Amar Rav Elazar, ha'oyma Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, if the husband says afterwards that I found Pesach Pasuach, I found it to be looser, more open than I expected. Now, Rashi explains, he's not claiming that I didn't find blood. What are the possibilities? One is, Rashi says, we're going to learn later on Daf Yud Amud Beis, that there was a family in those days called the family of Durkati, who has a normal thing. It ran in their family not to have dam basolim. So it's very possible then that he does a bia. He doesn't expect to find blood because he knows from that she's from that family, but he finds it looser than expected. And that's Pesach Pasuach. Or the second possibility, Rashi says, is the cloth that they were supposed to use got lost. We don't know whether there was blood on it. But he does know, so he knows for a fact, he's saying, I know for a fact, Pesach Pasuach Matzasi. Was there blood or not? I'm not sure. Now, what? No, because he would check it the next morning. But what's the problem with Pesach Pasuach Matzasi? The possibilities now are as follows. Number one, we're going to assume at this point that it means that she actually had relations with somebody. Tosfos brings up the consideration, why don't we just say it was Mukas Eitz, that maybe she was injured. Tosfos themselves answered, because if it was, then she would be counterclaiming that. There's no embarrassment in claiming that. Other Mephoshim say that no, such a thing is very rare. Realistically, you can't consider it as a possibility. So that's the argument. Why don't we say that it depends what kind of mukas eitz. Exactly, that's the point. So according to Tosfos, it might be likely, but if it was, if she didn't have the sulim because of mukas eitz, she would say so. There's no embarrassment in that.
No.
Whereas according to other rishonim, no, it's so rare that we can't consider that as a realistic factor. So no, it has to. Wait. Book of Faith, whether she has the 200 zuz or not, we'll get to in a couple of days in a Mishnah. But so let's assume then that it means that she had relations with somebody. Now, when did it happen? If it happened before the Kiddushin, no problem, or at least it doesn't make her osur to him. It might create problems with the Ksuba, which we'll have later, but at least it doesn't make her osur to him. If it happened after the Edersin, then it would depend whether it was consensual or not. If it was consensual, she would be osur. If it was non-consensual, if it was oinus, if it was a rape, she'd be mutter. We'll get to in a second. But first, Rabbi Elazar starts saying a general statement. We believe him to the extent that she's also to him. Meaning, Rashi says, she doesn't lose her ksuba. We don't believe him to say Pesach Pasuach Matzasi and say, therefore, she loses her ksuba, although we'll talk on Amud Beis more about that. But for the time being, let's assume that. But what he did is Shavya Nafshe Chaticha Di Sura. We had this concept before, that he by his statement, Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, he is declaring that I consider her offer to me. Well, then, therefore, she's also to him.
How does he know it's Pasuach?
That's another question. We're going to get to tomorrow also how an unmarried man Bechlal should know that Pesach Pasuach. But for now, let's leave that alone. We'll get to that tomorrow. What? She doesn't lose her ksuba, but what? If he is, then how does he know? We'll learn tomorrow. That, yeah. Yeah. No, if he's not a bacher, then yeah, we can expect him to know what Pesach Pasuach is or not. But yeah. Anyway. We'll get to that detail about Bacher versus Almon tomorrow. But for meanwhile, what we're saying is that we consider her to be also to him. The question is, Vamai Svek Sveka? Why is she also to him? Isn't it a Svek Sveka? Sofek Tachtav, Sofek Ein Tachtav. First of all, it's a Sofek whether Bechlal. Fine, let's forget about Mukas 8. But first of all, we don't know whether it happened before she was Niskadish to him or not, which if it was before, then she's Mutter to him. The Imkim Salema Tachtav, and even if it happened after the Kedushin, Sofek Bonus, Sofek Berotin. So Sofek whether it was consensual or not. So why should we say Neman La Israel? The answer is Leitzricha Be'eshes Kayin, because one case that Rebbe Lazar could be talking about if it's the wife of a Kayin, so then the only possibility is then we learn to Yuvamis, and we'll learn further that a Kohen's wife is also to him even Ba'onis. We'll learn more towards the end of the second parak about this whole topic. So therefore, we only have the one topic if it happened before or after she was married. Incidentally, one of the Noda Behuda mentioned, we learned the other day in connection with the whole discussion about Tibor Lahegman Tchila, we mentioned there that Rabbeinu Tam holds in Tosfos that if a goy has relations with a Bat Yisrael, she doesn't become also to her husband, not even rapes, even if it was consensual. So then according to that, why don't we say over here that there's a suffix whether it was a goy or not? And in that and the Noda Behuda says, because we're talking over here, we don't assume, I guess this assumption was valid in the times of the Gemara, that she's going to that she's going to actually go and bring herself so low as to consort with a guy. As opposed to now, I guess. I mean, in Tanakh, all the cases we find of intermarriage are Jewish men marrying Goyish women. I don't think we find in Tanakh the other way around. Yeah. Anyway. So number one, if she's an Eishes Kohen, then you only have the one suffix. V'iboy seva be'eishes Yisrael, or you could say, even it's talking about a Yisrael's wife, or could go into Kabul, ba'avur, kiddushin, pochosim, v'at gimel shana b'yamechad. But if her father accepted kiddushin on her behalf when she was less than 3 years old, the kiddushin archal midaraisa, less than three, though, we know, if we don't find that she has psulim now, we know that the bia had to have happened after three, because Rashi quotes from Gemara and Nida that before three, the psulim would grow back. So therefore, it had to have happened after the kedushin. Well, if it happened after the kedushin, then you only have the suffix, whether it was ba'onis or berotin, and then she'd be yosef. We have to be talking about, by the way, Mephoshim point out, we have to be talking, if we're saying over here, Tosfos points it out over here, that we have to be saying that now when he's doing the nisturin has to be when she's already a gdola, when she's already 12, because otherwise the rule is pituya kana onesi. Even if we were to think that it was consensual, but it wouldn't be if Tana can't give consent. So therefore, necessarily, we have to be talking about her father accepted kedushin on her behalf when she was less than three. But now, only now, when she's 12 or whatever, are the nisurin actually happening? And then he finds Pesach Pasuach. No. Here we're talking. No, it has to be. We're saying over here that if the father accepted kedushin on the daughter's behalf, if the husband was mekadesh the daughter by giving the kedushin to her father when she was less than 3 years old, so now, by the time she reaches the age when the besulim will not grow back if they're damaged, she's already niskadesh. She's already an eishes ish. At that point, any time between then and 12, when she's actually getting married, or any time between then and when she actually gets married, if the besulim are missing, it means that it happened after the kedushin. And then you have that, and then you have the suffix, whether it was ba'onis or berotin.
The case where
it
accidentally opened.
That's what we said, up to three, yeah.
Well, up to 3 years old.
No,
wait.
Up,
No, up to three. Yeah, that's
up to three.
Yeah. So the question is, my kamash malon. What exactly in that case? Then what? Then what exactly is Rebbe Elazar's chiddush? Tanena. Is the chiddush this idea that you say neman lo Yisrael, of this idea that a person is believed to say shavi anafshei haticha b'Yisuri, even though it's sophic, I'm declaring that this is also to me and therefore it's also Tanena. We learn a mishnah to that effect in kiddush. Ha'omer le'isha kidashtich. If a man says to a woman, I was mekadosh you, and we had Edim, but now the Edim aren't around, but he met a Floyki Dashtani, and she says, you are not Makadosh me, he Mutaris Bekrevav, then she's allowed to marry any of his relatives. From her point of view, there was no Kedushin, so therefore she's allowed to marry any of his relatives. But he, who also Bekrevav, yeah, but he's also to marry any of her relatives. So yes, if Shavya Napshach Hetzichdi Surah, if he declares that she's also to him, then she's also to him. So that's the same thing we're saying over here. What is Rebbe Elazar adding? The answer is, Maudatema Hosam Devade Kimle. You might say, there he's saying it as a Vadai. I was definitely Makadish you. She's denying it, but he's claiming I was definitely Makadish you, and we had Edim, just the Edim aren't available now. Avalhacha Mekum Udele Kimle, but here you might argue that maybe he himself is not sure. He's claiming Pesach Pasuach Matsasi, but really, does he really know what a Pesach Pasuach is? Maybe not. Kamash Malan, that's the Chiddush, that nevertheless, if he's claiming, Pesach Pasuach, then we say we'll take him at his word. If you want to say she's also, then fine, she's also to you. So far we said he does have to pay her a ksuba. So far we said that according to Rashi, that Rebbe Elazar holds he does have to pay her a ksuba. We'll talk on Amud Beis, we'll see what Shmuel says. So he answered himself to her, but he's claiming she's also. You know what? It would be the same kind of thing, for example, as suppose, for example, he's a Kohen. After they're married, his wife is raped, Rahman al-Islam. He has to divorce her. He still owes her a ksuba. It's called Mustafa Sadeo. Basically, it's your tough luck. You were married to me. You owe me the ksuba. You don't get out of it just because this happened. Same thing over here. Right. Well, over here it's not onus, but it's a similar idea. He's claiming that she's also. By the way, if she was counterclaiming, I'm still a basula or whatever, that's a whole different matter. We'll get to that over the next couple. We're gonna get to that over the next couple of days. Here we're talking about she's not counterclaiming anything. She's agreeing Pesach Pasuach. She's agreeing there was a Pesach Pasuach. But when did it happen? That's the question. And by the way, it talks about the Pesach Chuva. Talks about at some length whether in this kind of case whether we actually force him to divorce her or not.
Did she ask about when it happened?
If we ask her, if she says, fine, whatever. I mean, what are we talking about over here? Maybe she herself is not sure. Right. Put it this way: the husband's claim is a claim of shema. Maybe after we were miskadish, after our kedushin, you had relations with somebody else, whether ba'onus or beratzin, or maybe not. If she counterclaims bari. No, I'm certain that it happened before we were ever niskadish. That's another matter. But here we're talking about that she herself is not counterclaiming anything. She herself doesn't know or whatever. Yeah.
Either one
could be possible. Yeah. Anyway. Okay. The question is, did Rebbe Elazar really say that? That because that this woman is going to be ushered to her husband just based on a suffix like this? A woman only becomes also to her husband from Znus, unless there was kinui, unless there's the official warning that he warns her, as it says in Sota, Alti Sasri Mishpoini, don't seclude yourself with so and so, Ustira, and then she actually was secluded with him, only then does she become also to the husband, like the actual case that happened with David and Bathsheba. So the immediate question is, what do you mean? How can you understand that that's what Rebbe Elazar means? Maisa shahayu v'kinui stira haba. That case involving David and Bathsheba, there was no kinui, there was no stira. Uriah we never find in the pasuk that Uriah warned her not to seclude herself with David. V'oi miyasrua. And besides that, they didn't ask her. The fact of the matter is, after Uriah died, David did marry Bathsheba.
No, there's
no reason. No, the dinim of the Torah apply the same to Melech as everybody else. But wait, we'll talk about soon what the exact circumstances were with David and Bathsheba. Wait. No, Holy kasha. Okay, that last problem is not such a problem. Hachi karma, because what Rabbi Elazar means is as follows. Eina isha neseres habayla elal iske kinu istira. No, what he means is fakir. A woman only becomes also to her husband if there was kinu and if there was stira. We see that mimaisa shahaya. We see that from the actual case in history of David and Bathsheba, deloy have a kinu istira, veloy yitzira. Where exactly that? We see that there was no kinu in stira, therefore she did not become also to David. So the Kamaisa Shahaya, in other words, is saying this proves that you need Kinu and Sira in order to make her also to her husband. Kasha. But still, you have the original question. Kinu Yastira ain't Pesach Pasuach Loi. Rabbi Elazar is saying she only becomes also if we have actual Kinu Yastira, not just if the husband claims Pesach Pasuach. So what are we telling about here? Pesach Pasuach, the Neman La Oistra Olav, we believe the husband, and therefore she becomes also to him. According to Rabbi Elazar himself, you need much more than that. Ella, kinu yistira. Vili tameich, the Gemara answers back, nu, according to your logic, what are you going to say? Kinu yistira ein edim loy? So what are you going to say that according to Rabbi Elazar's rule, you would say that you need only kinu yistira, but if you have edim, if you have actual edim tumor, she wouldn't become also? Of course not. If you have edim, there's nothing stronger than that. You need only one edim anyway? Yeah, well, one second. The answer is ella hachikama. A woman does not become also to her husband only based on one aid. You need two aidim. But if there was kinu and stira, then one aid is good enough. We learned from the pasuk actually, the Gemara explains at the beginning of Saita, because once you had kinu, once it got to the point where the husband actually had to warn her, don't seclude yourself with so and so, and she went and did that, at that point already there's a raglayim ladaba. There's a strong basis for suspicion that she really was mizanah with him. And therefore, the Torah says one aid is good enough. If there was one aid, if there's one aid of tumah there, one aid seeing, as the Gemara says in Makkah, Mishiro, Kimanathim, that we see them already in the position, like lovers, then that's already enough to ask her.
So the statement of the husband is almost considered as another aid.
One second. Pesach Pasuach Kishne Edim Zami. When we say, when the husband says, Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, that is the equivalent of having two aidim. Because if there's Pesach Pasuach, he knows for a fact that she has had relations, because again, we said we're discounting the possibility of Mukaseh. There has to have been relations involved over here. The question is whether it was before or after the Kiddushin, but again, if we're talking the wife of a Kohen or that she was Niskadish less than 3 years old, then there's only one suffix. Therefore, yes, that suffix is the equivalent. That suffix makes the fact that we found Pesach Pasuach means there's no question there was Bia over here. Therefore, that's the equivalent of 2 Adim. So to summarize, so what? We did, and that's why the Gemara is later on going to talk about Tainus Damim. But right now we're saying, fine, it's subjective, but he himself is claiming it. It's subjective in the sense that, as opposed to if he's claiming Tainus Damim, that's more of an objective thing. We have to look for the cloth, see whether there's blood on it or not. We'll have a few cases the Gemara is going to bring on that about that on Daf Yud. If he says Pesach Pasuach, there's not necessarily any physical evidence that we can bring one way or the other to prove or disprove it. But if he himself is saying it, then fine. He himself is declaring she's also to me. And therefore what we're saying is, Rabbi Elazar, what the Gemara is saying at this point is that according to Rabbi Elazar, we consider that the equivalent of two edim. So we have as follows. Normally it takes two edim to ask a woman to her husband. Pesach Pasuach is also the equivalent of two edim. If there was kinu yastira, then he only need one edim. Now, going back, v'chitema ma'isa shahaya mifnei ma'aloy asrua, nu, so going back to the ma'isa shahaya, the case of David and Bathsheba, and by the way, one of the Mephoreshim points out, why do we call it that unusual word ma'isa shahaya? I mean, there's lots of ma'isa shahayas in history. The reason is because this is actually the only case in Tanakh that we find of a woman who was with somebody other than her husband, except for Esther, and that was a whole different issue.
Wait,
of course it happened.
No. But
wait, the question is, v'chitema ma'isa shahayim ifnei ma'aloy asrua, in that case, many edim knew that David had been with Bathsheba. The pasuk says that David sent messengers and brought her to the palace. So everybody knew that she had been with David while Uriah was still alive. Mipnei ma'aloy asrua. Why indeed did they not ask her to David? We know the general rule. The Gemara mentions in Soita, k'shem she'asur labayo kach asur labayo, just as a woman becomes asur, whose mizana is asur to her husband until she drinks mei soita, so is she asur to the boil, to the third to her paramour. In this case, if we're saying there were edim, Therefore, she becomes also to Uriah. She should also be also to David. Why not? Why isn't? Why do we find she wasn't?
They were Edom that she came to the palace.
Ah, the Tosfos discusses that. The Tosfos says that they were Edom that she came to the palace. It's not Edom they actually had relations. But Tosfos Tosfos explains that no, the question is not so much about Edom. The question is David himself knew, obviously, that he had had relations with her. Fine, you don't need Edom for that. He himself knew. Once he himself did tshuva, why didn't he divorce her? He himself, forget about Edom, not Edom. He himself knew that he had had relations with her while Uriah was alive, when she's an Ashes-ish on the face of it. So if she's... Don't jump ahead. Wait a second. Yeah. But right now the Gemara doesn't know of that yet. So right now we're assuming that she was a full-fledged Ashes-ish. David was having relations with her while Uriah is alive. Therefore, she's also to Uriah. David himself knows full well that she's also to Uriah. Automatically, she should be also to him as well. So Tosfos is the same. Once he did tshuva, why didn't he divorce her? Or send her away, whatever. The answer is, hasam onus haver. Answer number one is, in that case, it was a matter of onus.
For her,
yeah. And so some of Farshim point out that in fact the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin that in fact she was a Ktana at the time. The Gemara mentions she may have been seven, she may have been six or whatever. We just said before Pitri Ktana Onasi, even if it was supposedly consensual at that age, she's not able to give consent. Therefore, from her point of view, it's considered onus. Now, a woman who's raped is not also to her husband. And the Gemara is saying at this point, therefore, if she's not, the two things go together, kashem shasur labao kachasur laboil. Well, if she's not also to her husband, because it was an oinus, then she's not also to the boil either.
Why was it for him?
We're not saying it was for him an oinus. Actually, there are some mafarshim who point out, based on a Gemara at the end of in Perek Chelik, where the Gemara, it's actually not in Chelik, actually in Avodah Zarah, where the Gemara says over there that David says on himself that we know how did the whole thing happen. David, it isn't Sanhedrin actually. David asked that the Avisha should test him. B'chaneni Hashem v'naseni. The Avisha told him, I'm going to give you a test. You're going to see. You're not going to pass it. And kachava. So to speak, like even David himself in a certain way was sort of forced into the situation. So yeah, some of Farshim do talk about that. So when we say here onus hava, we mean that to a certain degree it was an onus on his part also. But primarily we're talking about it was an onus on her part. The Iba is same, or another possibility, like what Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni says in the name of Rav Yonason, the famous thing that you just mentioned, Yaakov, Kola Yotza Mochemeth Beis David, anybody who goes out to fight in the wars of Beis David, get Christmas, Kosev Lishtai. He has to write out a get to his wife before he leaves, so that if he dies or goes missing in battle, then his wife will be divorced. Just is, as it says in the Pasuk, we find many years before when David's brothers have gone off to battle. So Yishai sends David to give it to them with food and other stuff, and he says, "V'esachecha tifked l'shalom, your brothers you should greet in peace. Check on how they're doing. In other words, v'esarubasam tikach, and take their aruba." It means the matters which are combined between him and her, the kiddushin. You're to take those away, Yishai is telling David, by taking a get from them to their wives.
Did they force them to give a get?
Not force, but in other words, what we're saying is that Yishai made this takana. Yishai made a minhag in his family that they should give a get before they go off to war. And David, when he became king, made it official policy for the Jewish people. So therefore, Uriah gave Bathsheba a get before he left. So Rashi discusses over here, Tosfos has a long discussion here, also in Shabbos, what kind of get was it? Well, according to Rashi, it was a conditional get. If he dies during the war, then it should be in effect from when it was written. Which in the end, Uriah ended up dying in the war, in the battle, so therefore it took effect as of then.
But nobody knows what it
was. Wait, Tosfos... Right, but if it applies retroactively back to when he gave it, then fine. Tosfos has a bit of a discussion about that, but it's not so simple. It's not so simple to say that, because yes, after all, he did return from that first stage of the war. He returned back to the palace, and David tried to send him home a couple of times, and he wouldn't go. Only later on did David send him back to the front, and he was killed in battle over there.
So Tosfos
explains differently. Rabbi Natam explains that no, it was an unconditional get. There was no conditions, no nothing. They gave the get unconditionally. But, so what's the problem? The problem is what David held accountable for, because everybody understood that even though these gittin are being given unconditionally, everybody knows as soon as the soldier comes back, he's gonna remarry his wife. So for David to come in over there and take her away while she's still unofficially, so to speak, unofficially married to Uriah was wrong. She was pregnant from David at that point, right. But at any rate, so one or the other of these reasons explains then why she wasn't also to David. Either that it was onus, or that in fact she'd been given again. And by the way, the post can talk about whether the second answer contradict the first one, in the sense, in other words, do we say that la halacha, a woman who's been nanas, is mutter to, we know she's mutter to her husband, unless he's a kohen, is she in fact mutter to the boyle? According to the first answer of the Gemara, yes, she is. Do we say that that's overridden by the second answer, that we say, forget about onus, it wasn't a case of onus, it was a case of kolayotel mochamas based David. Therefore, after all, the din would still be that a woman who was nanas may be mutter to her husband, she's also to the boil, or no, does that first answer still exist? It's a machlokas. By the way, there's also on this line kolayotel mochamas based David, we know there's the famous sicha that the Rebbe Rashab said on that to the Bacher Matem Chatzmimim a couple of years after he found the Tem Chatzmimim, explaining the deeper idea of it. Kol HaYotzeh L'Mochemes Beis David, you have the Pasuk describes there's two kinds of people who fight against the Eibishter, Asher Cherfu Eivecha Hashem, Asher Cherfu Ikris Meshichecha. You have the ones Asher Cherfu Eivecha Hashem, the ones who are Hashem's enemies and mock Torah and Mitzvot altogether, and then Asher Cherfu Ikris Meshichecha, the ones who do keep Torah and Mitzvot, but they have a certain coldness about it. So those are the two types of people that Milchemes Beis David, the soldiers of Beis David, are fighting against. And therefore, what do you have to do? Because of get krusis l'ishtay, you have to write out a get and cut off your ishtay, your gashmius, your body. You can't be thinking of your own personal needs. You have to cut all that off and focus on the war and the Milchemes mitzvah that has to be done to work to bring Mashiach. Of course, but we're talking yeah. Omer of Yosef, Omer Abaya, rather, Afanan Nami Tanena. Yes, in fact, we can see this idea that we said, that we started the sugya with, that we said, if he says Pesach Pesuach, then we say she's also to him, Afanan Nami Tanena. We can see that actually from our Mishnah. Vesula Nisas L'Yom Rabi, we said that a Vesula gets married on Wednesday, L'Yom Rabi, Ein L'Yom Chamishi Loi, on Wednesday, yes, on Thursday, not. My timer, now why did we say? We said, why does she have to get married on Wednesday? The main reason, Mishra Makrura Daita, because we don't want him to calm down and forget about it. We said, for example, if the wedding takes place on Thursday or Friday, then by the time Monday comes around, the next time that Beis Din sits, he's going to have forgotten that he has a Tainas Psulim. Now we have to consider, Ulamai, what are the Rabbanan concerned about that he might calm down and forget about? Is it that he's going to forget that, you know what, I didn't find her Psula, I found Pesach Psuach, therefore I shouldn't have to give her full Ksuba? What's the problem? Masevla. So what's the problem? He can give her the whole Ksuba if he wants to. Why should we davka make a takana? They have to get married on Wednesday so that the first thing he can come to Beis the next morning, why don't we say Adaraba? Fine, let him get married on Friday. By the time Monday rolls around, he'll have forgotten the whole thing. Years later, when she's paid her Ksuba, she'll get the whole 200 zuz. What's the problem? Obviously the Mishnah has to mean that the problem is if it turns that it could be that she's also to him. We don't want that he should calm down and she's going to be also to him, and meanwhile he's going to forget about it and stay married to her. Which goes to show that if he has a tainus psulim, then that creates a problem. Now, what kind of argument is he making? L'chora, we're talking about the kind of taina that we were just talking about over here, that he claims Pesach Pesuach. So obviously then, yes, the Mishnah is implying that if he claims Pesach Pesuach, he better get to Beis Din as soon as possible, because at this point she's also to him. So if we find out, once they go to Beis Din, they'll clarify the situation, they'll find out whether it happened before the Kiddushin or after, whether it was consensual or not. But yeah, that therefore it would be important for them to get to Beis Din as soon as possible. And that proves Rabbi Elazar's point. And the answer is loy, not necessarily. You could say that it's more of the objective claim, that he's claiming I didn't find dummim. In other words, we have the sheet there and it turns out there's no blood on it. So that's a serious taina. The point is, like this. If we say there's no blood, If we say there's no blood, that's a serious taina. That's an objective thing. That goes to show that obviously she's not a psula. Then there's a real reason maybe to be concerned that there was bia over here, and therefore that and we have the suffix, we have the various sfeikas that we mentioned before. But if he says pesach pasuach, not necessarily based on our Mishnah would we say that there's a problem. Maybe if he says pesach pasuach, Basin would tell him, you know what, you think it's pesach pasuach. You know, I mean, is it really pasuach? You know, it's more of a subjective thing. You can't necessarily prove from the Mishnah what Rabbi Lazar is saying, that pesach pasuach is enough of a strong enough taina to offer her to him.
The absence of blood would be a stronger claim. Even without the
kinnui. Yeah, because again, it's not a matter of kinnui. It's a matter of we don't know at that point. He has a strong claim at this point. He's saying, obviously, she had relations with somebody. Now we have the various spaces. Was it before or was it after? Was it bonus or was it production? So that's what has to be hashed out and based in. Now, on the other hand, Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, Ha'im of Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, Neman Lapsidik Subasa. If he says that I found Pesach Pasuach, then we do believe him to make her forfeit her ksuba. First of all, when we talked before about Rabbi Lazar, Rashi said that Rabbi Lazar said that he's believed in the sense that she's offered to him, but she doesn't forfeit her ksuba just based on him claiming Pesach Pasuach. Shmuel is obviously saying she forfeits her ksuba. Does Rabbi Lazar agree with Shmuel that she also forfeits her ksuba based on his claim, if she's not counterclaiming? According to Tosfos, yes. According to Tosfos, the machloikas is rather that Rabbi Lazar says she's also to him and she forfeits uksuba, and Shmuel saying she only forfeits uksuba but she's not also to him. And also, when we say forfeits uksuba, by the way, are we talking about there's a whole 200 zuz, or are we talking about she doesn't get downgraded to 100 zuz? That we'll talk about in the next couple of days. So Shmuel saying neman lafsid uksubasa. Now, what's the reason for that? Rashi says that later on, the Gemara says, we'll learn it tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, that we have chazaka, a person is not going to go to the tircha of making a whole wedding meal and then spoil it. If he went, the chassan paid good money and then worked hard to make this wedding feast, we said before he's supposed to spend at least 3 days on it, it's a chazaka that after that he's not going to ruin the whole thing by coming and making a false claim of Pesach Pasuach. If he's making the claim, we have to take him at his word. Well, if you have to take him at his word, then she's not a psula. So again, we can either say she's considered a non-psula and she's downgraded to 100, or we could say maybe it's a mekachtos and she loses her ksuba entirely. But according to the different possibilities. But either way, that's why we say neman lafsid ksubasa. And Amr of Yosef, my kamash malon. So what's the chiddush? Tanena. We learn later in the perek. Ha'oichol etzel chamiv v'yehoda shalai be'edim. If somebody eats by his father-in-law's house. And in Yehuda, when there's no Edim, Eina Yachalit and Tainas Psulim, then afterwards he's not able to claim a Tainas Psulim, because they are in Yehud together. We said the other day that in Yehuda they had the minhag that the Chassan and Kala would be in Yehud after the Erusin, before the Nisuin, in order that they'll get to know each other better, and that way when it comes the actual wedding night, they'll be more comfortable around each other. Many times it would happen that they would actually end up having relations. Then we learned the Yerushalmi gives a reason for it, that they wanted that they should be bonded together before the Hegmon might come and grab her away. Anyway, so what's the implication? Evidently, then we're saying in Yehuda he can't make such a claim because if he comes to Beis Din after the Nisuin and says she wasn't a Basula, Beis Din will tell him, you know what, it was probably you. You can't, you know. Habagol Matitoin. Evidently, we're saying in Galil, where they don't have this minhag of Yichud before the Nisuin, he is able to make such a claim. Well, am I? Now, what do we mean when we're implying that in Galil, such a claim is valid? Ila Oistra Olav, if we're going to say that the claim is that she's Osir, be Yehuda Amai Loi, then why shouldn't he be able to claim such a thing in Yehuda as well? If he says in Yehuda, you know what, even in Yehuda, if he comes and says after the wedding, you know what, Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, I found her no longer a Basula, I know for a fact I didn't have relations with her, so obviously it must have been with somebody else. Yeah, in Yehuda she'd also be. There's also the same suffix that would make her also. Ela lav lachsidik subasa. Obviously, the question is that he's arguing he wants to make her forfeit her ksuba or part of it. So in Yehuda we tell him you don't have any claim. You yourself probably had relations with her. In Galil there was no Yehud, so in Galil there was no Yehud, so there was no possibility of that. Udkatoin taina mai. And what kind of taina is he making? lav dekatoyin tainef pesach pasuach. Again, shouldn't we assume that it's the claim of pesach pasuach, and then that would prove and then that would prove Shmuel's point. That not only would prove Shmuel's point, it would make Shmuel's point unnecessary. Yes, in the Galil, where they're not misyached before the wedding, if he claims pesach pasuach, evidently he has a right to claim that she loses her ksuba. Because if in Yehuda he might even have the right to claim that she's also to him if he says I didn't have relations with her, but at least in the Galil he has the right to make her forfeit her ksuba. The answer is loy dekatan kind of dumb. Again, we can answer like before that there's a difference between the subjective and the objective claim. If he claims pesach pasuach, we tell him that's subjective. Maybe, maybe not. You don't have any proof one way or the other. That's not enough to aser her to you, and that's not enough to make her lose her ksuba, just based on your subjective opinion of pesach pasuach. But if tainas domin, that's more of an objective thing. And we know for a fact, Rashi explains, we have to be talking about the case where the Shushvinin checked things out and made sure there was no foul play over here. There wasn't a cloth with blood, and then he sneaked it away. So then, yes, there's a serious claim. That's a real bari claim that obviously she's not a psula. And then we have and then there might be reason to argue that she forfeits her ksuba. So what Shmuel's saying and what the Mishnah is saying are two different things. The Mishnah would be talking about tainas domin. Shmuel is talking about tainas pesach pasuach.